Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 183, I chat with C.H. Chi, general manager of DVDO, about wireless HDMI and HDMI switching. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded November 18th, 2013, episode 183, HDMI Helpers. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere, on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/HTG to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/HTG. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use. It doesn't require a contract, and it offers unlimited devices on one account. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit htg.ting.com. That's htg.ting.com. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and director of content at avsforum.com. This week's guest geek is C.H. Chi, the general manager of DVDO, and we're going to be talking quite a bit about HDMI. Hey, Chi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. For those of you who are tuned in live at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv, can post questions for Chi as we go along, and I'll pass along as many as I can. So, Chi, DVDO is well known for video processing. You've got two standalone boxes that are available now, the iScan Duo, I think, and the Edge, correct?
Yeah, the Edge Green, that's right.
Edge Green. So named, I assume, because it's green, environmentally conscious in some way?
We made a lower cost version of Edge, the original Edge. We have a newer chip in Edge Green, and it's using lower power. So that's why you call it green.
Ah, very good. Some of the other TWiT hosts, Padre SJ in particular, remarked that he remembered seeing DVDO processing embedded in Blu-ray players and such, which I think, is that still true?
Yeah, that is still true. Some AV receivers and Blu-ray players still use DVDO's processing. DVDO has had a rich history of developing technologies. We started about 14 years ago when a bunch of Apple guys made a video processing chip and system. It's called the iScan Plus. And then we started a company called Anchor Bay Technologies, and we developed a lot of the chips where the chips are then used inside the DVDO box. And video processing is still being used today.
Yeah, and it's very good video processing too. I mean, I've seen it in action plenty of times, and it's demonstrably really, really good. So congratulations on that. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Actually, what we're here to talk about is HDMI, a very important subject these days, especially with the recent announcement and finalization of HDMI 2.0, which I've had on the show a couple people, at least one, Mike Heiss, who made sure that we knew that HDMI licensing does not want you to call it HDMI 2.0. Have you heard the same thing? They don't really want to use numbers anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting because they don't encourage using numbers, but they are also forced when they come to specification to use numbers so people know what the spec is. And that's probably because a lot of people who have used the numbers, even if they comply with one feature of the spec, they would just call it 2.0. So people assume that, you know, all the features of the spec, you know, is available. So you could call your product HDMI 2.0 and only maybe have one of the features out of the four, and or whatever. And it's confusing to a lot of users. So they'd rather just you tell the user what feature you're supporting.
But we can't really expect that, can we? I mean, people are going to say 2.0.
Yeah, people will use it. That's right. I think all the standards body can do is to basically encourage you not to do that. I don't think there'll be a, you know, they can control that.
No, I don't think so either, especially for manufacturers who want consumers to think that they're offering HDMI 2.0. We've seen a number of companies already announce, hey, look, our TV, our Ultra HD TV has HDMI 2.0.
Yep, and well, you have to dig a little deeper to find out what it means.
Yeah. Exactly what that means. For one thing, it doesn't mean is there still are no HDMI 2.0 chipsets available, right?
The at least in product. Yes. Yeah, at least in product. I mean, Panasonic has announced a TV that has an HDMI 2.0, claims to be HDMI 2.0, I believe. So I'm assuming that what's in their chip is supports HDMI 2.0, some of the HDMI 2.0 features.
Right.
One of the issues really is because even though HDMI 2.0 has been announced, it takes time for silicon to come out and also for the products to be tested for HDMI 2.0 compliance. So there's two specs. One is the spec itself, which we can has been announced. Then there's the certification specification, if you will, like, you know, what are you going to test to? And lastly, people have to submit their product to be tested. So that all takes a while.
Yeah, exactly. So the parts of HDMI 2.0 that can reside within the 1.4 bandwidth, which is what these chips are limited to. I believe 1.4 bandwidth is 10.2 gigabits per second. Is that correct?
The way it works out is that for HDMI 1.4, the highest bandwidth that is supported is used in terms of clock speed, which is 297 megahertz. Mm-hmm. Or people just call it 300 megahertz. So what comes out of the each signal in HDMI is basically a 3 gigabit per second. I guess you have three of them times. Yeah, it's 10 gigabits. That's correct. Approximately 10 gigabits per second.
Right. But an HDMI 2.0 has upped that to, I think, 18.
That is correct.
But there are no chips that have a clock fast enough to support 18 gigabits per second, right? Not yet, anyway, in the marketplace.
Yeah, not yet. I think, again, we don't have enough information from the Panasonic TV. At least we have seen it, that it is possible that they have the 600 megahertz chip available. But certainly from Silicon Image, you know, from our point of view, we have not seen in production the 600 megahertz. But I think one would have to check with Panasonic on the 600 megahertz capability.
Now that you bring up Silicon Image, and I wanted to make sure people understood, because this is a little fuzzy.
Yeah,
Silicon Image is a company that's related to DVDO.
DVDO is a subsidiary of Silicon Image. About three years ago. Go ahead.
What's that relationship? Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So about 3 years ago, Silicon Image acquired Anchor Bay Technologies, and Anchor Bay Technologies created the VRS video processing chips and made the DVDO video processors. So after the acquisition, DVDO and the VRS chipsets are now part of Silicon Image.
Okay, and is Silicon Image then a chip maker?
Yes, Silicon Image actually has several businesses, primarily making chips for HDMI and MHL as well as wireless HD. So primarily a semiconductor company, but it also has sells intellectual property, IP products for use by other chip makers. And it also makes systems, including DVDO brands as well as Simplay test services. So, but the main product is chipsets, yes, and chips.
Chipsets. And you guys haven't made any 600 megahertz HDMI 2.0 chipsets yet, right?
Stay tuned, yeah.
I'm sure you're working on it.
Yeah. It's not been announced, I believe, yeah.
But you haven't really sold any yet, right?
Well, we typically would announce our products right before shipping. So since, it's in process, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Hopefully, you'll have some news at CES and we'll see some stuff at CES. I'm expecting we'll see things there. Yeah, hopefully, yes.
Yeah, we work very closely with the tier one consumer electronic companies who are essentially, you know, working with us to get HDMI 2.0 chips coming out, especially the ones that are really, really fast. So yeah, stay tuned. It's coming.
Okay. Well, give us an overview of HDMI then. What do consumers really need to know about it? Or home theater geeks like us?
Well, HDMI, I guess I would start with HDMI 1.4. HDMI 1.4 started with essentially several new standards, right? One was the, you guys probably remember when 3D was the rage, if you will. So that was that was 3D. We remember those days, not too long ago. Yeah.
How quickly they forget. Yeah, it wasn't very long ago, was it?
Yeah, not too long ago. And then it added things like audio return channel. The way HDMI works is that the guys who work on the spec always try to make sure that things are backward compatible. So HDMI 1.4 adds on beyond the features of HDMI 1.3. So the key features are 3D support, upping the link from 148 megahertz pixel clock to 297, if you will. So that it can support 4K 24. So 4K 24 being, 24 frames per second for film especially. So, or 4K 25, 4K 30. So, mm-hmm. So that's HDMI 1.4. And then there's a need for higher bandwidth to try and bring out 4K 60 at RGB rate. So that's what people are working on right now. And a few other standards, but other features, but primarily most people are looking towards increasing the bandwidth for 2.0. So they just keep adding features. HDMI has also grown in terms of its membership, in terms of how they define the spec. Sometime last year, I believe, there was what's called an HDMI forum where more people were involved in defining the spec. So it's evolving, but it's always considering backward compatibility to make sure users are not affected by it.
Now, I understand that HDMI continues to add features, and now with 2.0, they've increased the bandwidth, clock speed, and the amount of data that can flow down the pipe. But I've heard a lot of people say that even HDMI 2.0 might not be enough for this new Ultra HD, or what some people mistakenly call 4K, especially if we increase the bit depth of each color. Right now we're at 8-bit color, and a lot of people would like to go to 10 or 12 or more bits per color, a wider color gamut, higher frame rates, greater dynamic range, which is what the bit depth is. And a lot of people are claiming that HDMI 2.0 is already being challenged by what that might become.
I've heard that too. I've spoken to a few people as well at the CDR trade show about needing something more. As a systems maker, we try to essentially follow the formats, and the only thing I can say is that in consumer electronics, especially for example, Blu-ray, 8-bit has always been used, and at a very low sampling rate, 4:20. And at some point in HDMI's evolution, there's a bit deep color for more bit depth, and with 4K 60, it's true that HDMI is limited to 8-bit for 444 RGB, for example, or 444 component. But in general, I think the expectation with HDMI 2.0 is that you can get a plenty good picture quality at 4K 60 with RGB 444. And if you need to, you can always use higher bit depth with component and subsampling the chroma, which is what is typically used in consumer. So I do agree that in some applications, maybe like if you compare with professional standards where you have 10-bit RGB or 12-bit for that matter, like in a digital cinema, there may be a perception that you need better quality. But I guess the folks who came out with HDMI 2.0, their belief is that it's important to increase the clock speed to support the features that 2.0 is supporting. And it's an evolution. The spec is not sitting still. I believe that they are continuously working on providing better performance. Mm. So,
what
yeah,
about?
I've heard of that.
You've heard the same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
You've probably also then heard a number of people say, "Why not use DisplayPort, which already has greater bandwidth, and I think doesn't charge licensing fees."
Yeah. You know, DisplayPort is really has been designed primarily for a graphics format, and bandwidth-wise, you know, HDMI is essentially with 2.0. I think it's getting pretty much on par. I don't know the details, unfortunately, about DisplayPort because I haven't been focusing on that particular standard. Mm-hmm. But you know, HDMI has that's the fees that HDMI charges for membership, we believe, is important for maintaining compatibility, testing, you know, pushing the standard forward. DisplayPort has been successful, especially like in PCs or laptops, where they're essentially pushing the digital connection to the to monitors. So there are people who are talking about DisplayPort being better than HDMI. I think what our position is that we are trying to do our best to get the standards, HDMI 2.0 standard out and continue to improve on the standard.
Mm-hmm. Untoward in the chat room is asking, is there a physical difference in the cables between HDMI 1.0, 1.3, 1.4, 2.0, all these different version numbers? This is a question I often get, I need to get a 2.0 version cable. Is that really thinking about?
The spec itself, essentially HDMI 2.0 doesn't call for a brand new cable spec to support a higher rate. Essentially, if you have a cable that is designed for HDMI 1.4, I think they call it the Category 2 cable, i.e. a high performance cable that's supporting HDMI 1.4. That cable should work with HDMI 2.0. So that's how they have written and provided the spec. So it should work just as well.
There was a difference in cabling between 1.3 and 1.4 in order to allow audio return channel and Ethernet over HDMI, I believe, correct?
I believe that is true because the audio return channel uses one pin that is typically not used in HDMI 1.3. So if somebody creates a cable without that physical wire in that cable, then it would not work. So HDMI 1.4 did use the audio return pin.
Mm-hmm. Weirdami in the chat room is asking, are end users going to notice anything different or with regard to the HDMI version of a device, or is that just for wonks?
Well, I think with HDMI 2.0, certainly there are a couple of features that has been added, right? So, if you need more audio channels, if you need for 4K 60 when 4K 60 sources are available, the one thing I can think of is that when video is captured at 60 hertz, let's say for sports, you will certainly notice a difference with a film because 4K 24 is film, right?
Right.
So at a very low frame rate. So if you connect it to a TV and the TV, the TV will have to do two things. One is either repeat the frames or interpolate the frames. In either case, it won't look as natural as sports, let's say, or live action at 60 hertz. So that's the one immediate thing that I think consumers will notice. The question is, when will you get 4K 60 cameras and content? Well, I guess I'll let the market figure out. So to me the biggest difference is 24 to 60 and the frame rate that the consumers should notice the difference.
Mm-hmm. Luis in the chat room is mentioning that the physical connector of DisplayPort is better than HDMI. I don't know about that. They're kind of similar, as I recall.
Yeah, the DisplayPort connector, there's two, I guess. One is a bigger connector than HDMI. And there's also a mini DisplayPort connector. So I've heard, I can't comment on that, I guess. I mean, to me, they look similar, so I don't have a lot of experience with DisplayPort.
Right, right. Well, we're talking about HDMI here, and we talked about cables, and that leads beautifully into a discussion of wireless HDMI, which again we can't call it that, but because we're going to explain that. Chi, if you'll just hold on for a second, I'd love to thank one of our two sponsors for this show, which is Hulu Plus. Now, Hulu Plus is an online streaming service that provides you with tons of content on your just about any device that you have, be it mobile or your streamer or your Blu-ray player, or your TV. Most people are familiar with Hulu.com, which gives you a lot of content on your computer. But if you want to take that content with you on your iPad, for example, or into your home theater, I'm just calling up my Hulu Plus app here on my iPad as soon as I tap it correctly. And you can see that that I have Hulu Plus on my iPad. I can take it wherever I go and watch just tons of television content and movies as well, anytime, anywhere, really. You can watch your favorite TV shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live, Shark Tank, Family Guy, and Saturday Night Live. I was just watching the Saturday Night Live from last Saturday, in fact, with Lady Gaga. You know, I can't say I'm a big Lady Gaga fan, but I do respect her. And so I was very interested to see what she did on Saturday Night Live, and it was really pretty cool. You can watch every episode of shows like Lost, Doctor Who, Community, and Star Trek, which I'm certainly doing. And they even have exclusive content, you know. Hulu Plus has created shows like The Wrong Mans and Behind the Mask, which I'm looking forward to checking out because it's about sports team mascots, you know. And if you've ever gone to a game, a football game or something, and you see that, or a basketball game, and you see that mascot running around, what's their life like? I mean, that must be pretty hot in there in that outfit. So I'm looking forward to checking that one out for sure. And you also get plenty of access to a great collection of ad-free content for kids and movies as well. And that's all for only $7.99 a month. Catch up on current shows, binge on old favorites, one of my favorite things to do, or catch a great movie. You know, you can stream as many TV shows and movies as you want, all for that low $7.99 a month. Right now, in fact, you can try Hulu Plus for free for 2 weeks when you go to huluplus.com/HTG. Now, that's a special offer for our listeners, so make sure you go to huluplus.com/HTG so you can get that extended free trial, and they know that we sent you. And we thank Hulu Plus very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire TWiT network. So we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Hulu Plus. Okay, so we had a great segue into the next topic of conversation, which is wireless HDMI, or what we might call wireless HD. Why can't we call it wireless HDMI, Chi?
Well, because HDMI is a wired spec. So I think the HDMI folks, they don't want to confuse the branding and the application of HDMI. So if you're testing for, HDMI certification, wireless doesn't make sense because HDMI by definition is wired.
Oh, okay, so it's by definition has a cable involved.
That's right. Yeah, that's one cable from a source to a sink, if you will, for HDMI.
Right. So what are the limitations of that cable, and which will lead us into why we need wireless?
Well, I mean, a cable in general, a cable is great. It's for short runs, it's low cost. For heavy runs and long distance, you know, cable will attenuate the signal. And also cable is bulky and very difficult to use if the distance is long. So with HDMI, you can probably send a signal pretty well up to about 20 feet, 30 feet or so. And beyond that, it gets it gets difficult.
Because the signal attenuates, and
you lose some, you lose the signal quality to a certain degree, right?
Now it's not like analog fall off though, where it starts to degrade a little weirdly. What I've experienced is you start to see kind of white speckly, sparkly kind of stuff going on, and then the signal's gone. It just disappears.
Yeah. It's kind of like things digital, right? Sometimes you are at home, you're watching a satellite dish and the weather was terrible. You see pixels showing up. So with HDMI, it's more binary in nature. So as you see, it's speckly and it goes away. If the signal is really bad, sometimes with HDCP content protection, that may get disrupted. You may see snow, things like that. And also, for a lot of reasons, sometimes you just don't want to have that cable, that you have to string, let's say, from your source all the way up to your projector. Let's say you have to drill holes in a wall, things like that. So there are applications where wireless is handy.
And there are, if I'm not mistaken, two different wireless standards for transmitting high definition video. Tell us about both of those.
Actually, there's two major ones, I guess. There's more than two. One certainly is based on Wi-Fi. I think your listeners may have heard of a Miracast, or a Push to TV. Let's say some marketing name, Intel, or something called Wi-Fi Display, Wi-Fi Display, Wi-Fi Direct, that kind of stuff. So in general, it's based on the Wi-Fi radios signaling, and they're trying to essentially send a video audio signal from a source to a display that way. Another standard, which I think is less popular now, but which was fairly popular some time ago, is called WHDI, which is basically using 5 gigahertz radio, but it is not Wi-Fi specifically, just the radio itself. And it does a pretty good job with sending wireless.
But that 5 gigahertz range is, which WHDI operates in, is more or less the same as Wi-Fi, right?
Yes. And that's one of the problems is that initially Wi-Fi is at 2.4 gigahertz, and then now we're running out of bandwidth, so we are going for the 5 gigahertz bandwidth as well, a radio as well. So that's why we use a wireless HD standard, which is based on a 60 gigahertz radio. So that is a lot higher than 5 gigahertz radio, and as a result, we don't have problems with interference, for example, from Wi-Fi.
Right. That would seem to me to be the big problem with WHDI and these other Wi-Fi based formats is interference with other traffic in the same radio frequency band.
I would think that would be the biggest benefit of using something like 60 gigahertz is that you don't have to worry about interference from Wi-Fi, at least not in the near future.
Right.
Yeah.
So DVD-O actually makes a product that uses this wireless HD 60 gigahertz wireless HD. It was a good name for it, by the way.
Yeah.
Whoever came up with that was very good. Called the Air. I think you're in your third generation, right?
That's right. We first came out with the Air in around May of last year, and we just have a new product that we announced at CEDIA called the Air 3. There's no really Air 2 because our chipset skipped the generation to the third generation, and so we just said, well, 3 just means 3. We came out with 3 for a couple of reasons. One is the third generation of our chipset. And second is that it supports 3 interfaces. So the transmitter can accept HDMI, DVI, and also our new mobile standard called MHL. So any 3 of those can be connected to the transmitter and it will send a signal to the display.
Ah, okay. Now we saw a picture a moment ago and I just wanted to make sure everybody saw that. Basically what wireless HD, the DVD-O Air as an example, you connect the transmitter by a hardwired HDMI cable, a short one presumably, to the transmitter, and then it transmits wirelessly to the receiver, which is connected by an HDMI cable, again a short one presumably, to, say, your TV. And then that eliminates having to connect a wire directly from the source to the display.
That's right. So you would typically place all your sources in an area. You can basically have your AVR as well connected to a bunch of sources. And then the AVR also can be connected to the Air3's transmitter. And then you can place your receiver next to the projector or next to a TV. And this is handy if you really don't want to have to string a long cable to a projector, let's say. That we have a lot of inquiries from churches, hospitals, universities, and home theater where they really don't want to have a long cable to go between the display and their sources.
Mm. So what is the range then of the Air at 60 gigahertz as compared to, say, the WHDI at 5 gigahertz?
For 60 gigahertz, our range that we would guarantee, if you will, for lack of a better term, is that it would be 10 meters or 33 feet or so, 35 feet or so. But it can go a lot longer. It all depends on the configuration. During Cydia, we actually, it was really fun. We connected our transmitter to the output of the Dish Network booth. And then to the output of Dish Network receiver, if you will, in a booth. And then right across the aisle, we connected to a digital projection projector. And we measured that to be 68 feet or so. So it could be two or three times more than what we say because we are being more conservative. And the main reason for that is that if you have a line of sight and you have and your room is structured so that the signal can be, if you will, virtually pointed between a transmitter and a receiver, then you can go pretty far. And the 60 gigahertz signal also bounces off walls, so you know you don't have to have strictly line of sight, but there'll be some attenuation when the signal bounces off the wall. So in general, you know, we say it depends, but easily 35 feet or so.
Yeah, this is one of the things I've heard about wireless HD, the 60 gigahertz system, is that if somebody at such short high frequencies and short wavelengths, if somebody walks between the transmitter and the receiver, they can actually block the signal.
That is actually true. Depends on how it was implemented. Early versions of wireless HD adapter sets somewhat susceptible to interference when somebody walks past. Our latest generation, the Gen 3, is actually quite flexible. I mean, if you were to put your hand over the transmitter and receiver and literally try to block the signal, then the signal wouldn't pass. But if you were just to stand in front of it, but there's enough room around you and walls as well, the signal will literally bounce off the walls and the receiver will pick up on the signal. And because the receiver and transmitter constantly talk to each other, and if the main path is blocked, then you'll find another path to capture the signal. Some of these guys, I guess, use terms like beam steering to be able to effectively steer the beam from one point to the other. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of paths for the signal to go, and it always continuously tries to pick the best signal path it can. So, it's quite robust, actually.
But the 5 gigahertz system, the WHDI, we'll just stick with that for now,
sure,
doesn't really have that concern, does it? I mean, you can walk between the receiver and the transmitter and it won't disrupt the signal. Not only that, 5 gigahertz can potentially, anyway, actually go from one room to another.
Yes, the 5 gigahertz signal will go. So it's quite good for multi-room application.
Yep.
The way I would say it is that for people who want to use a wireless technology and have it to be as close to a cable performance as possible, wireless HD is a really good fit within the constraint of a single room or a single, you know, conference room or a large area. Whereas if you need multiple room application and less physical interference, if you will, then the wireless technology that's based on 5 gigahertz would be a better fit. Mm-hmm. So, which is why the trade show, for example, I mean, the reason why I like to use the term a cable replacement, or at least as close to cable performance, is that we kind of take cables for granted. You know, cables give you the best signal, if you will. I mean, a really good cable, the signal is perfect, right? Cables don't have the delay is not really noticeable, if you will, through a cable. And it has no interference, right? Once you have a cable, you're done. So the wireless technology, if you want, really has to try to measure up to what a cable can do. And as far as wireless HD or 60 gigahertz technology is concerned, quality isn't an issue because you have a lot of bandwidth. So that's not a problem with 4 gigabits per second. Interference is not really an issue for us, as we talked about earlier. And lastly, latency or delay is really not an issue as well, because we don't do a lot of, we don't do any processing like compressing and decompressing, if you will, within the 4 gigabits per second, because you have so much bandwidth. So that's why during we showcase gaming, playing like PS3 game, if you will, at the trade show, because at the trade show got all these radios going around, and we are not affected by the interference from Wi-Fi. And gaming is like the most strenuous test for video, if you will, because
certainly for latency.
That's right, because we can't play the game. So we did that at the show. I think just to illustrate that. We are as close you can get to a cable performance for wireless. So I think it depends on the use case, depends on what people want.
Sure, sure. Now, you said that your transmission system carries 4 gigabits per second?
So wireless
but HDMI is 10. cable, I mean.
Yeah, HDMI cable has 10, and HDMI is moving ahead. So wireless is, if you will, a little bit behind in terms of trying to do things that the wired or wired HDMI can do. So on the wireless HD side, what we have is our implementation anyway. We have two channels of wireless HD, meaning that you can actually use two Air 3s at the same time in the same room. Each one of them will use one channel. Each channel is 4 gigabit per second. So basically, we have a total of 8 gigabit per second. Or, you know,
but that requires you to use two transmitters.
That's right. So it will be possible to try and send higher than 4 gigabits per second, but we need two. And that's something that, you know, we at this point we are certainly working on ways to figure ways to send higher bandwidth over wireless. But Air 3 at this point supports effectively a 1080p 60 a connection for its highest resolution.
Okay, 1080p 60
3D 7.1 channel audio, high bit rate. You know, it's like assume Blu-ray, if you will.
Right. So I've got a question in the chat room. Taylor Karras is asking, does wireless HDMI support, or wireless HD rather, support HDMI 2.0 or 4K?
Wireless HD, the way it's implemented right now, does not support 4K, just does not have the bandwidth to support 300 megahertz. So it's currently limited to 1080p 60, 3D, and 7.1 HD audio. Mm-hmm. We are working towards, we're figuring out how to catch up to HDMI.
So I guess, are you saying that if you can support full HDMI, full 1080p 60, 3D, 7.1 audio, are you saying that when that goes down an HDMI cable, it's not using any more than 4 gigabits per second?
On the cable side of things, you know, at 4 gigabit per second, 1080p 68 bit, I believe, is sufficient to send the data. Mm-hmm. Now, if you use 10 bit or 12 bit, we won't be able to support it. So we're
right,
limited
but, I mean,
to 24
Blu-ray, bit. Yeah. Blu-rays are 8 bit. So let's say 8 bit, mm-hmm. 1080p 60 with 7.1 audio, I guess doesn't require the entire bandwidth of HDMI to be transmitted.
No,
even down
not.
A cable.
No, that's not.
Yeah, okay. So your wireless HD system, the Air 3, can handle that no problem. But if you need more than that, which you would with 4K of any sort or anything right. else that requires more bandwidth, higher bit depth or so on, then you know, we're talking the next generation. As you say,
yes,
you're playing
correct.
A bit of catch up with the cables.
Right. We're catching up to HDMI. Yep.
And you mentioned a moment ago about the different inputs into the transmitter. You have HDMI, you have DVI, which is the video-only version, kind of a previous version of HDMI that only carries video, no audio. Right. And then MHL. And that's I wanted you to explain that to everybody what it is.
Sure. MHL is a connection standard, if you will, that we have designed to target mobile devices. So anybody with a Galaxy S3, S4, or any Android, higher-end Android phones, if you will, most likely will have MHL embedded in it. And the MHL interface allows the phone to connect to a MHL TV. And the difference with I think the best way to describe it is just to compare and contrast with HDMI. So with an MHL phone, you have a cable that you connect to the TV. And if the TV is MHL enabled, like I think most Sony TVs are today, it will actually charge your phone. So power flows from the TV to the phone. It keeps your phone charged. You can send essentially high def video and audio to your TV. And last but not least, we all have also defined what's called RCP, remote control protocol, so that your TV you can use your TV's remote to control your phone. So imagine you plug your phone into your TV, you sit on your couch, and now you switch input from your on your TV to the phone. You see the phone, you know, Android phone interface in front of you, and now you can navigate the Android interface with your MHL TV's remote. So that's the idea. And so the idea then is that you can do whatever you normally do on your phone on a bigger screen without draining your phone's battery. In fact, it's actually getting charged. And you don't have to step up to your phone to interface with it. You can use your TV's remote. So that's really the basics of MHL.
Now, is the MHL connector any different from HDMI?
So this is the part where it gets a little confusing. MHL spec itself does not specify a dedicated connector. In fact, one of the reasons why the cell phone guys really wanted to use MHL is that the MHL reuses the USB connector on the Android phone. So you don't have to create another connector, and connectors are a big deal on phones. So previously, if you want to send, you know, like 1080p audio video to your TV with a phone, you need a micro HDMI connector or a tiny one, and they are not very reliable because of, you know, pin density. So what the phones do now with MHL is that on a 5-pin, if you will, micro USB connector, the phones are smart enough. The phone essentially talk to the TV, and they basically switch into MHL mode, and the phone effectively disconnect the USB portion and uses the 5 pins for MHL. And on the TV side, the TV just uses the the HDMI connector on the TV side. And when they handshake, they flipped into MHL mode.
I gotcha. Yep. Well, I've certainly seen MHL becoming, and by the way, MHL stands for Mobile High Definition Link, I think. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, just want to make sure everybody understood that. Make sure I got it right, too.
I think I got it right, too.
but I've started to see MHL pop up here and there. A lot of TVs and AV receivers, in fact, say that they now have an MHL input. The Roku streaming stick, for example, plugs into an MHL input. And it charges, you know, derives its power from that and does its wireless streaming into that kind of input. So I think it is something we're going to see more of in the future. And the Air 3 transmitter has such an input on it so that you could, in fact, connect your mobile phone to the Air 3 and have that transmit wirelessly to the TV.
Right. So just want to make it clear that the Air 3 actually only has one connector The idea
as
is
MHL.
That it has a connector. Just one connector. It looks like an HDMI connector, and it will just be smart enough to figure out whether it's DVI or HDMI or MHL for that matter.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right. So the idea there is to basically replace a cable. So certainly we've gotten a lot of feedback from our customers that, you know, they would like to get more connectors to the air, and that's something that I'm looking at pretty closely.
Okay. But in the meantime, DVDO actually does offer something to address the issue of multiple connectors, and how fortunate it is and how timely that that becomes our next point of conversation right after I thank our second sponsor for this episode, which is Ting. Now, Ting is a mobile phone service. They're a reseller of the Sprint network, but it's a pretty special thing. It's really not your average everyday cell phone service. There are no contracts and no early termination fees. It's contract free. And they even have an ETF, or early termination fee relief program. If you're gonna pay an ETF to transfer over to Ting, they've got your back. They will give you a credit for up to 25% of your for 25% of your ETF up to $75 per device. All you have to do is purchase your device through Ting, port your number over, submit your final bill with your ETF detailed from your previous carrier, and they will take care of it up to $75. Go to ting.com/ETF for more information on that. Now, there's no bundling or ride-along services. Rates range from XS to XXL service levels for voice minutes, text messages, and megabytes of data, all billed separately. That's really important. There are no overage charges or penalties. You get charged just for what you use. If you have a heavier month with Ting, just pay for what you used. No add-on charges. You get voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding, and other features are all part of the service. And there are no mysterious line items on your bill. Ting charges you for what you use, plus whatever taxes they're legally required to collect. No hidden charges or recovery fees at all with Ting. You can even have unlimited devices on one plan, which is really cool because you're sharing pooled minutes, messages, and megabytes. Each device on the plan costs a flat $6 a month. There's even a powerful online account control panel, which lets you take control of your account, lets you look at your usage and bills. And there's even a no-hold customer support. Dig this. Call them at 855-TING-FTW anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and a real person will pick up the phone. How often does that happen? Certainly not often enough in my book, but it will at Ting. They also offer great online support as well at help.ting.com with active customer forums, a simple and powerful help ticketing system, video tutorials, startup guides, and much, much more. First, you purchase your mobile device from Ting, which you'll receive in 2 to 5 business days. Then you activate your device with Ting and have the option to select a new phone number or port an existing one. Ting will break your rates out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes and bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. So visit Ting today at htg.ting.com. Save money and better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. Check out their savings calculator and see how much you or your company can save. Home Theater Geeks viewers also save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. So visit htg.ting.com and start saving today. And we thank Ting very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire TWiT network. Okay, so we were talking about the fact that the Air has one input, HDMI input that'll accept HDMI or DVI or MHL. But what if you've got a bunch of HDMI devices? Maybe you don't even have enough HDMI inputs on your TV or your AV receiver. Or say if your AV receiver is old enough, it might not have any at all. So fortunately, DVDO offers a great solution to that problem as well. Chi, why don't you tell us about it?
So in our Wyatt products, we have our video processors, the iScan Duo and the Edge Green, which can take, the Duo has 8 HDMI inputs, Edge Green has 5. And we also have 2 4K video switching products. One is called the Quick 6 and the other one is Matrix 6. Each one of them have 6 HDMI inputs. And the Matrix 6 and Quick 6, 2 of the HDMI inputs are also MHL capable. So you can easily, very easily connect, if you will, multiple sources to a Matrix 6, showing on the screen. And then one of the outputs can easily be connected to the Air 3s to provide a wireless connection to one of the TVs that you have, to your projector, for example. So
right.
These wired products work very well as with the Air 3, Air 3 being, if you will, the accessory to connect to the switching products.
Now, what's important about the Matrix 6 is a Matrix switcher, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Right. So the
What is that? Why is it important?
So Matrix switching allows you to essentially have just one set of equipment, a place somewhere, for example, in a main room. And when you connect, you can connect your two displays to the Matrix switcher, and each display will switch independently. So you may hear the term zone one, zone two sometimes being used, or multi-zone. Effectively, the way we think of it is that we have two displays, display one and display two, or main display. And you can independently select inputs on each display, so you don't have to duplicate your equipment and just have one. So it's pretty handy for some applications.
The application that I think of immediately when I think of a Matrix switcher, and by the way, the Matrix 6 is technically known as a 6x2 Matrix
right.
switcher. It has six inputs and two outputs. And that is, if you have in your home theater a projector on a drop-down screen firing onto a retractable screen, and you have like a plasma or an LED TV behind it, so that when it's bright, it's during the day, the windows are open, the kids are playing in the corner, whatever, or you've got a Super Bowl party and a bunch of people are around, you can retract that screen and watch the LCD display, LED display now, which will be much brighter. But then when you want to watch a movie at night, you want to have a more cinematic experience, you drop down that screen and you play the projector. And the ability with a Matrix switcher to send any input to either output, or in the case of some switchers, many more outputs, just being able to kind of route whatever you want, wherever you want, seems like an ideal situation for such a theater that has two displays like that.
Yeah, so theaters on two displays. In fact, our other product, Quick 6, will also do what you were suggesting, which is one or the other. The Matrix switcher adds another feature, which is one or the other simultaneously. So say you have a main room, main theater room, and you have a big display there, and then you have a secondary room where you want to also watch, somebody wants to watch another some other content somewhere there, and you can do it at the same time. So say...
Right, of course. So the application I'm thinking of, the Quick 6, would work just fine because you're not going to watch them both at the same time.
Both simultaneously, that's correct, yeah.
All right.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say then, but then that brings up the question of how do you route HDMI to another room?
You
can't probably run a cable that long. The Air 3 won't transmit into another room.
That's a good question. So, you know, for the second room, there's a couple of ways to do that. You certainly wouldn't use an Air because it will not go through the wall. You can have a long HDMI cable that goes 20, 30 feet or so, but those are unwieldy. So another approach is to use HDBaseT, which is an HDMI extender technology, for example, or balance, which is effectively connecting HDMI to a adapter that converts it into a 10BaseT cabling, and some homes have those wiring.
Ah, yes, okay. So a balun, BALUN, which is short for balanced, unbalanced, I think.
Yeah, balanced, unbalanced, I believe, yeah.
Not unlike the term modem for modulator, demodulator, or codec for coder, decoder.
Right.
They all basically have a similar meaning, which is that they convert something into something else and then convert it back. Right, exactly.
Right.
So if you take... interestingly, I think a balance work kind of like the Air or wireless HD in that you connect an HDMI cable to a balun that converts it into, say, Cat 5, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
I've even heard of some that use fiber optics,
could be,
which you could run hundreds of feet.
Fiber will work quite well for very long runs. That's correct.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the other end, you've got another balun that converts it back into HDMI, and that connects to your second TV. So for this multi-room or multi-zone application, that's really what you're talking about, isn't it? Is having to either use a balun system or...
Some people use HD-based T these days, especially.
HD-based T.
Yeah, that's a standard. That's correct.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about HD-based T, because that's pretty cool.
So HD-based T is a standard that's, I think the semiconductor company is called Valens, V-A-L-E-N-S, semiconductor. And they basically do essentially like what you were saying, Scott, is that they just essentially convert HDMI into a signaling that runs off a Cat 5 Plus or Cat 6 cable. And then on their transmit side and on the receiver side, they convert it back. I think one of the advantages that they have over a balance is that it's more reliable, and I believe there's a lot of digital processing that goes in there. I'm not super familiar with the standard except for the high-level use case where you can effectively send a 1080p signal for up to 70 meters or so, or maybe even up to 100 meters depending on the models that you use. Mm-hmm. So they're very popular in the CDR channel, I believe, at this point. Yeah.
Now, isn't HD-based T also being, I think it's being implemented on certain products. Within certain products, it's either Onkyo or Pioneer receivers, I think, now have them.
Yeah, some. I visited the Valens booth, the HD-based T booth at CEDIA, and some mm-hmm. they showcase some a couple of AV receivers and a couple of TVs and projectors that have the receiver built in. So you basically have a. So they also design it so that it's like an Ethernet pass through. So you have essentially a projector that has an Ethernet connector, and the Ethernet connector basically can be used for HD-based T.
Ah, okay. Any plans to put HD-based T into the Quick 6 or Matrix 6 or even Air?
It's something that I'm talking to some folks about. Quick 6 and Matrix 6 are meant to, Matrix 6 especially, is really meant to be a lower cost matrix switcher for smaller room installation. Mm-hmm. There's, I think, a possibility that if we build a larger system with more outputs, let's say, for truly a multi-room application, there may be a use case where you may want to have, say, maybe one or two HDMI outputs and the other two could be HD-based T. So we are looking pretty closely with the guys on Valens to see how we can do this cost-effectively and in a timely manner. Mm-hmm. The one thing that we need to spend more time thinking about is that, you know, there's the HDMI 2.0 support and everything else, and that takes a bit more work to make sure that I don't develop too many products too quickly, if you will.
Yeah, you don't want to spread yourself too thin there.
Yeah,
exactly. I know I've gotten a couple questions in the chat room. I can't find them right at the moment, but tell us what the MSRP, the cost, the list price of the Air 3 system and the Matrix 6 and the Quick 6 for that matter.
Sure. So Quick 6 retails at $399 and the Matrix 6 will retail at $499 and the Air 3 is $199.
So $199, $200 for a cable replacement, which eliminates the need to run long cables and all that jazz within one room. And I want to make sure everybody understands that right. The Air 3 is meant to be within a single room as opposed to moving through walls, which you've said it can't do. And that's okay. That's what you've designed it to be, is something for within a single room.
Correct.
Weird Ami in the chat room is asking, what does DVD-O stand for?
Oh, boy. I mean, I was one of the co-founders of DVD-O in 97, and we were sitting around a room trying to figure out, at that time, 97, that's a while ago. At that time, yeah. I don't know if your listeners remember, that's when DVD just started, the DVD format just was being defined. So we were just playing around with DVD and digital video, and eventually we decided that digital video and DVD together is DVD-O. But one of my colleagues thought it would just be fun to just call it digital video done outrageously. So that's I suppose I'd call it that.
Ah, very good. I'm glad you came up with that. That's really good. Digital video done outrageously. That's how we eventually.
I guess the genesis is not that, but somebody fitted the tagline "digital video done outrageously" to DVD.
Came up with that later. Yeah. One last question. We're out of time almost here. Does video processing? I don't want to get back to video processing here for a second. Does that? Do you have yet upscaling to 4K or UHD?
Yes, we do. At CEDIA, we showcase our 4K scaler that uses our latest video scaling algorithm that can actually detect whether the content is video or graphics. So right now, when we scale video, a lot of scalers will just focus on video scaling, which does a fantastic job with video. But when the content is mixed in with graphics, the graphics doesn't look as good. So we have come up with an adaptive video scaling algorithm, and we showcase a prototype of a box that converts pretty much any resolution to 4K, and we are hoping to productize it very soon.
Mm-hmm. Taylor Karras in the chat room is asking a related question, which is, isn't it true that when things are upscaled, they lose detail? How do you manage to solve this problem when developing the chip? Or the algorithms more precisely?
Yeah, so it's very difficult. Your listener is the question is right on. When you don't have the detail, it's impossible to create a detail from the air. So you do your best to extrapolate the missing pixel when you scale up, if you will, because you have to create new pixels. So you use an algorithm to calculate the approximate pixel location, and then what you do is. And it will create, it will inevitably make the picture look a little soft because you are essentially averaging. So we have a variety of enhancement, if you will, a processing, post-processing after the scaler to sharpen the image, to try to bring back more detail. So, but technically speaking, though, you can never create detail that's not there. You can only do your best guess. But I can tell you, though, that we have done demos with a Blu-ray 1080p upscaled to 4K using our scaler, and we don't even need that much enhancement. It looks pretty good, I would say.
Well, I look forward to seeing it.
Sure.
And anything else that DVDO comes up with, because you guys always come up with really great stuff. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Scott. Take care.
You bet. You can find out all about DVDO products at DVDO.com. You can find me at AVSForum.com. And you can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at HTGeekScott, also at AVSForum. And you can also find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here on twit.tv/HTG and on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twit. Home Theater Geeks. Next week, I've got two guest geeks lined up. Marty Humphrey and Chris Jacobson, both re-recording engineers at The Dub Stage, a post-production house here in Los Angeles. And they've got a sound system there from a company called Oro, which is a three-dimensional sound field system currently for commercial cinema, but soon we think to be possibly available at home. It's a direct competitor to Dolby Atmos, and I heard my first really good demo of it, and it sounded really good. So they're going to be on to talk all about Oro and what it means and how it works and what to expect in the future, so I do hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.